welcome back to Purple Row Radio. This edition is for Friday, March the 9th, 2012. My name is Greg Stanwood. I'm a staff writer at PurpleRow.com, and I'm here along, as always, with the managing editor of Purple Row, Andrew Martin. Andrew, how are you?
Oh, baseball's back, man. There's finally things to talk about that aren't just pure speculation or happenstance or all those other words that mean we don't actually know what we're talking about. We're just doing the best we can with what information we have.
Uh-huh. Very succinct. And also along with us is Paul Agnello. Paul, what's going on?
Hey, I'm also excited to draw firm conclusions from data that doesn't mean anything.
Yes.
Happy
it's
baseball,
the most
everyone.
Wonderful time of the year.
Happy baseball.
Happy baseball. Okay. Well, I guess since we all want to draw some conclusions from meaningless data, we should start this thing off by maybe going around and just seeing about what everyone's favorite early conclusion based on no evidence at all everybody wants to throw out there. Andrew?
Well, Ben Paulson is clearly the clutchest person in the organization. He had a walk-off home run in spring training against a guy who might not crack AA this year or whoever it was. I was at work. It kind of stunk having to watch that part.
Yeah, and it won the game, so he's clutch, too.
Exactly, and he's clutch. He's the clutchest player ever. He's like the new Jeff Baker, Seth Smith, John Vanderwall, all rolled into one person.
Okay, Paul?
I think Charlie Blackman, he's going to be so good that he makes having Dexter Fowler and Carlos Gonzalez completely redundant.
So he'll start over one of them?
No, we just don't need them.
He'll start over both of them is what he's saying.
He'll play two positions.
We're going to add a fifth infielder.
Oh, yeah. No, I guess we'll just move Kadire to first or something. We just need Blackman. He's so good.
We're going to go get, like, Joel Pinheiro or someone like that and trade for him so we have, like, a guy with, like, a 90% ground ball or something like that. So we just do the whole, you know, five infielders, two outfielders trick that they do in, like, extra innings.
Boom. There you go.
Except we do that for nine innings right there. There's no rules against that, right?
Why not just get a pitcher who throws only ground balls and then have nine infielders?
Come on, all ground balls, Greg? We're getting a little unrealistic.
That's just stupid.
Here now.
Just a little, okay.
Yeah, come on. Let's keep this realistic here, all right, dude? Like, Joel Pinheiro is something. He's a real person with a real name, all right?
I don't know. I've never heard of this fellow.
You ever heard of Joel Pinheiro?
Yes, I've heard of Joel
Pinheiro. Okay, like, Greg, you can't host this podcast and I don't know who Joel Pinheiro is? He's a guy, does things.
Yes, he does do things.
Indeed.
Okay, my pick is going to be that Will Nieves should obviously be the backup catcher because he throws out every base runner ever.
Ever.
Hell yeah.
He's got four of them, I think, maybe three so far. But either way, obvious that we don't need to develop Rosario. Just take the 35-year-old Will Nieves. I think it's a foregone conclusion at this point.
I'm hoping that Lars Davis can come and make that major impact that Will Rosario's not making. Okay, honestly, though, serious question before we go on to being silly again, because being silly is more fun. But is anybody – I mean, I'm kind of scared to say this, and it's such a short, small sample size, but is anyone else just, like, terrified that we've put way too much bank in Will Rosario?
I'm kind of terrified when we put bank in anybody. So,
okay.
Yes. Yes, the answer is yes.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like the bar is just set so low for catchers that, you know, even if he's not anything too spectacular, it's whatever, and his defense is hopefully decent enough. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not too worried. Yeah. You know, I don't know what else to say about this.
I mean, I'm even at the point where, like, I think about everybody who's going to be on the team, and it's not even a matter of the unproven guys. I think, oh God, we're banking on Troy Tulowitzki being a good player again. What if his arm falls off or he gets run over by a train or something? I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Prone to get run over by trains.
Well,
although he could get hit by a car and people would say he's injury prone or something like that, you know?
He does kind of have a thing for giving his car keys out to, like, team mascots. I don't know if he's responsible enough to handle a motor vehicle.
Oh, that's like what happened in the commercial.
Exactly, yes.
Oh man, I got the joke. No, seriously though. Paul, are you worried about Will Rosario, or are you just, yeah, because Greg's apparently worried about life. Do you have any, Darren, can you
explain? He already can't sleep at night.
You can't sleep at night? This is going nowhere, guys. This is going nowhere fast.
this is what happens when you ask the questions.
It's very true. So, no, seriously, though, I mean, spring training, for everyone who's been watching baseball for a while now, you know that spring training numbers don't mean anything at all. Yes, nope. They can be – the only thing they do potentially mean is more, are you going to be in AAA or are you going to be in the majors? The numbers are never indicative of things. It's watching how the pitchers pitch, how their pitches break, where they're working, what their delivery is like, what their plant's like, you know, their swing, their fielding, their first step, just all the things that coaches need to watch for, but just a lot of it all at once.
Well, it's basically like one giant collection of every single thing that can make a stat irrelevant. Small sample size, followed by it's a sample size that consists of players that are playing because they need to play and not for any other reason. And, it's on a set schedule, rotating players between, and just one struggling player is gonna, you know, cause the game to be lost or some such. So it's silly to even bother with this sort of thing. Although I remember we had one argument or sort of semi-debate about this back the first year we were doing this, and I was like, yeah, we can read a little into spring training stuff, but I was speaking on the most possible general sense and not any kind of nitpicking, like one specific game or some such. It's a futile errand.
No, I hear what you're saying, and there's obviously stuff to be drawn out of spring training, but it's more like, oh man, this guy only batted like 234. He's clearly not cut out for the majors or whatever. Doesn't necessarily mean anything. A lot of guys are notoriously slow starters. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there who are potential, you know, MVPs, Hall of Famers, who always have lousy springs, and just the way of things, it doesn't mean anything. And some guys have different workout regimens too. Some pitchers do better, you know, when they're too fresh, they need to deaden their arm out a little. Like sinker ballers are notorious for being dead arm pitchers. So, because they want you to be able to keep the ball low. So, and it also helps with the break of the ball or something like that. Whatever it is, like, some pitchers will come out a lot rustier because they need their arm to get broken in a considerable amount more than 2 weeks of pitchers and catchers can really provide. So we're seeing the players season them. That's why it's spring training, and they're just getting themselves warmed up for the season. This is you know, shaking off all the dust and the rust and the other things that rhyme with ust.
I was just about to say
it's shaking off the rust, the dust, and
Jack Cust. We came up with that at the same time.
That's
awesome.
Creepy. No, now they're gonna think we're married, Greg. Oh, look at
that.
Oh, Paul, what have you done to us?
Yeah. Get a room, guys.
So the players I am kind of worried. I mean, yes, again, they don't mean anything. So Moscoso could be just fine. He might just be getting his something. I don't know. Because I mean, he was looking like the number five favorite going into spring training, but he's given up what, like seven home runs in an inning or something like that. Now just hasn't looked very good. Has looked more like the embodiment of how bad he could be. And it's a very pessimistic way to look at it, sure. But when we're in this phase of spring training, pitcher performances could mean more than they should because there's a like three-way competition or five, six, seven-way competition for two rotation slots, assuming Pomerantz – well, actually for one, if you think about the fact that Pomerantz and Nicasio are both very likely to be in the rotation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of the way it's shaping up as well. I mean, I still consider it to be a battle for three spots, but Pomerantz and Nicasio are pretty likely at this point to be third and fourth, unless something really strange happens, and during the spring, strange stuff does seem to happen. See the first at bat of last year.
Yeah. So spring training, at least it's back. There's been baseball on TV. There's baseball on the radio. We can watch baseball on game day, sort of. It's good to be back.
It is. And I was looking at our lineup today. I just like the way it looks, you know, without trying to read into numbers or anything. It just looks like a solid lineup to me. Made me feel better about things, about the state of the team.
I will say that I'm excited about our lineup for the first time in a long time.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what our lineup was today. It was like seven or so of our regular players. But
Blackman, Scudero, Cargo, Tulo, Helton, Kadire, Rosario, Arenado, and Nieves.
Ah, yes.
I'm kind of surprised we've seen so much of Arenado and so little of Blake. I mean, I get it. Like, the organization is, they know that they have this opt-out with Casey Blake, so they're not tied to him. They have Brandon Wood on a minor league contract, which he's going to be, you know, honoring one way or not, very likely. And then they have Arenado, who's this dark horse for the position, but he, I mean, he's obviously going to get it in the future, but they're giving him all this playing time and basically letting him play his way out of the position. It's like Casey Blake sitting on a lawn chair with a Mai Tai or something like that, and then, you know, once if Arenado plays himself out, Blake, like, get up and stretch and, like, flex the bat across his shoulders and then go and, like, hit some dingers or make some slick moves or have a beard.
Well, that and he's, what, 39 now, so his bones are brittle and he can't play more than...
So he's sitting on the sideline drinking milk is what you're saying.
Right, yes. He might even be half as old as Jamie Moyer by now.
Oh, God. Oh, James. So, what do you guys think the odds are that Jamie Moyer actually makes a rotation out of spring training?
1 in 50.
That
well,
low,
He threw 2 scoreless innings today, so I say he's a lock.
Yes.
He has looked okay in his first couple spring. I mean, his last spring outing that we saw, when he went 2 innings with, I think, 1 run and.
Was that in the inter squad game?
That was an inter squad game. Yeah. And again, inter-squad game, it like means even less than a spring training game because it's like, hey, this guy played in like, you know, half A or something like that. Here, try to hit Jamie Moyer. But
half A?
Yeah, exactly. But you know what I mean. Like, you know, this guy's on the 40-man roster because he knows somebody's like, why is this guy on the 40-man? This doesn't make any sense. The thought process is that Moyer's had 4 good innings so far, and I don't think the organization is comfortable with anybody, so if they're going to err, they're going to err on the side of guy who's done it before and been successful at it. Because, like, what's the worst thing that could happen? It's a minor league deal. If he fails, you'd be like, yeah, so, this is awkward, but, like, you want to be like an usher or something? You fit the profile.
An assistant scout.
Assistant scout.
Assistant.
Third backup radar gun operator.
He could be the radar gun.
Eh.
You just position him in the right spot. Yeah, I guess that was about 85.
That was kind of weird.
Yes. Were you imagining somebody holding him like a radar gun? Because I was.
Yeah, like, what the hell? I'm like, yeah, he could, you know, beat Usher because he's old and stuff. And you're like, he could be a radar gun. Oh, yeah. They told me I could be anything, so I was a radar gun.
It's a dream job. Astronaut, cowboy, radar gun. Okay.
Oh, should we get some, like, righteous indignation here and talk about Alex White?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Actually, I was thinking before that we would segue there, because speaking of car keys, but that might have been bad taste. So.
Ooh, no. You better not edit that out either.
I won't. I will weather the criticism from the one person who listens to this and is offended.
Hip is going to be mad at you.
For what it's worth, I thought the same thing.
All right, so Alex White is not he pitched today or yesterday.
Yeah.
Someday recently.
He's no angel.
True. He was got in a little bit of trouble. He got caught driving drunk and said he had 2 drinks. And then look, I don't drink, so I don't understand alcohol, blood alcohol levels or anything. But apparently it was relatively high and was not 2 drinks worth unless he was drinking, like, I don't know, absinthe or something. I don't know. So.
Do you want me and Paul to just take it from here?
Yeah.
Well, Greg, what happens, and it's about time we've had this talk.
I'm going to get my pipe out now and look thoughtful while this is all going
Come
on.
Come here.
On your Joe Kimmel bathrobe.
Come sit next to me while I tell you a tale about
as
about
a dog
blood alcohol content.
The dog sleeps at your feet in the firelight. You're a rocking chair. Well, let me tell you. A 1.74 blood alcohol content means you're a little under 0.2 of a percentage point of your alcohol is your blood is actually made of alcohol.
See, I actually did not know that was how that was measured, so.
You know. Anyways, seriously,
What it means, Greg, is that if he had 2 drinks, he was drinking some real manly stuff.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
2 pint glasses of...
Yeah.
whiskey or something. He two
car bombs.
Do either of you happen to know what the legal limit is in Arizona? Or is it a federally mandated legal limit?
I don't know. I don't know anything about this discussion. Except that I have an opinion on it, which we'll get to in a minute.
Legal limit in Arizona. See, what White told the Rockies was that he'd had two drinks. Now, honestly, and one of our commenters put it really well. I think it was Franchise 26 or somebody, and he said that we've all done it once or twice. Not driven blackout drunk. That's not what he's getting. He's saying you've been in the bar, you had three beers, and you looked at your watch, and it was like 3 hours, and you figured that's a decent rule of thumb. If you want to be really cautious, you stay another hour and just to make sure. But about an hour a drink to work it off. And it actually was like 2.5 hours, so you were slightly more intoxicated still than you were, but you feel and look, you look fine, you have your capabilities about you, and you could conceivably blow over. If that was the case, like it sounded like it was with White when he said, oh, I only had one or two drinks, or, a couple, very small amount, and then blew a 174, like that's, you have to be having a couple buckets to blow a 174.
Mm-hmm.
And this has gone beyond the point of just, oops, I really, honestly, truly, hand on a Bible, thought that I was good to go. Apparently I wasn't. I'm, responsible, all that stuff. And, the alcohol-induced self-convincing that, no, you're good to drive. No, dude, this isn't even that hard. You just got to keep it between those lines and watch out for the brake lights ahead of you. And red means stop. You talk yourself into it and then you end up doing something. I'm guessing this is how it happens. I figure this is how a lot of dumb things happen when you're drunk. No, the shopping cart's for everyone, man.
Yeah, we'll really never know, and like you said, early on it seemed like, okay, was this, not being able to tell the difference between a 0.06 and a 0.09 blood alcohol content? Or is it something much severe, much more severe, and it turned out to be something more severe? I feel like I don't have much of a reaction to it other than that it's unfortunate, but I don't necessarily think it impacts, I don't think it'll impact him competing for a role on the club personally, but maybe that's just me.
Maybe not. The last part I kind of wonder about. I mean, with all the talk about not necessarily morality, but maturity,
culture of value.
And culture of value, yeah, responsibility for one's actions and misdeeds. This is kind of a big deal, and it's like, what do you gotta? I mean, someone brought up the idea of just demoting him to AAA as punishment, and I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I don't know how that's exactly punishment for something like this, though. I mean, you would think that if the team was really concerned, was it Craig Baker who posted in there and talked about how there's all these resources that the team has for, like, keeping track of you during spring training, and you can call them and have them drive you where you need to go or something like that.
Someone made reference to NFL teams that have a service like that, like everywhere. You just call the team's car. They come to, the bar you're at, and they will come pick you up and take you home, and it's like inconspicuous, and it's anonymous, and nobody's taking your picture or being like, Facebook, you're like, oh my God, I'm taking Jerome Bettis home and he's trashed, or whatever.
Yeah, I think Craig was saying, and his insights are awesome. He was saying that, they have these meetings, right, with various authorities, and in this case, like a local sheriff comes, I believe, and informs them about, like laws and legal limits around, driving with alcohol or something like that, and then also provides a sort of resource where players could call them if they're having like a fan stalk them or if they need a car ride home. One other thing he said too is that if he said that there was some sort of mention about nightwalkers, which makes me think there's a hotline for zombies also.
Yeah. When I first saw it, I was like, wow, there's like vampires in Arizona? What the hell? Then I was like, oh, street walking people at night, right. I feel dumb now.
Yeah,
I'm
here.
This editor, and I'm like, huh?
Nightwalkers.
I just found the comment. He says that they have a hotline in which there is an officer in every major league city whom you can call. If you have any issues ranging from being too drunk to an obsessed fan, you call them and they come take care of it.
Oh, okay. I mean, I must have missed that part.
You don't read every comment on your own blog. You're a failure as a human being.
I know. I'm usually at work.
Ouch.
Well, I say that just after pointing out that I read like 10 comments for every 10,000, so.
Well, the reason honestly I don't is that I like to be timely with the conversation, and then I'm at work all day and I got a very busy job and I can't afford to spend time on Purple Row. So, I mean, I'll pop in here and there, and yes, I do occasionally throw up an article, but it's usually something I'm, like, writing in my email or something while I'm working, and then finally I'm like, oh, it's done. Read. Okay, publish it. And just, like, I'm in the site, throw the article in, put a picture, tweet it, take it off, you know, close the window, go back to work.
Well, that would have been another opportunity to segue into our next topic, but I think we should keep at this one because I just was wondering what you guys think. I mean, you talked about someone suggesting that he get demoted to AAA as punishment. Should there be a punishment? Or what's your general opinion on what, if any, fallout should come of this?
You know, I'm not necessarily interested in the action or the transgression, right? I'm kind of more interested in what he does now, right? So... you know, I think he knows what he did was wrong. I think, you know, he's not too happy about it. I think no one's really too happy about it. But it's what's done is done. So I'm kind of more interested in seeing how he responds to it. And that's obviously something that we have very imperfect information on. But so that's just kind of my take. And then whether what the club does with him is dependent upon, you know, the kind of the message that he sends.
Well, I mean, I'm right there with him. A lot of this is going to be entirely on his head as far as being a mature adult about it and owning up to it. But I made this point before in other aspects of the game, like Ian Stewart and just never really putting it together. There comes a point in everybody's lives when they – there should be a point in everybody's life. It's hopefully a point in everybody's life where like, the switch finally turns and you realize, oh, I have to take care of this on my own. Oh, you mean like nobody's going to hold my hand? Oh, wow, they weren't kidding when they told me that in college. You know, not everybody gets that right out of the gate. Some people get it really young. Some people don't get it until they're, you know, in their 30s or whatever. But it has to be taking ownership of the things that are important to you. And with Stewart, it was focusing on his job and doing the best he could at that. But with this case, with like a DUI, I know people who are... A DUI itself might not be enough to shake things up, but it's one of those things where you realize, oh my god, this isn't okay. I can't just get away with this because I'm that good or whatever. You realize, oh, I'm more like everybody else. I'm a regular person and I have to be responsible. It could be just be that point of maturity and growing up that White hasn't hit yet. And I'm not just trying to absolve it. It's still a big stinking deal. It's just, maybe it's not so much it's a super duper serious, I'm an alcoholic problem, or I hate the team, or whatever. Maybe it's just that he made just a really, really bad decision, and hopefully he learns from it.
I think the thing that frustrates me about it is, I mean, I don't really have a personal stake in the frustration with people who drive drunk, just because, you know, I'm not one of those people who's ever had to suffer losing anybody due to irresponsibility like that. But I definitely understand the weight that has on certain people, because it's incredibly discouraging that such a just one simple bad decision can have the potential to cause such serious consequences. And from a personal standpoint, I'm rather upset with the guy just on that level. But I don't think necessarily that it's anybody's place to judge him more because he's a professional athlete. You see these people who are saying that, like, I expect the best from all the players on my team. I expect perfection or something like that. And I think that's just, you know, a bit of an overstatement, considering that, you know, the guy is just as flawed as anybody and is going to – I mean, as terrible as what he did is, I don't see it as any worse than any random person making the same mistake. So it's interesting to think about whether or not there should be, like, an athletic – related punishment that, like, the team places on him, or if it, I mean, obviously, I think whatever legal, consequences he has to suffer are obvious and should be, you know, taken in stride, but, I don't know about exactly how a team could really help to move that message along, or if it's really even their responsibility to do so.
It is a very personal thing, and not necessarily, I mean, it is obviously work-related in a sense, because, hey, man, now you gotta get a driver, or you gotta figure out the bus schedule real well or something like that.
Well, yeah, and especially if he actually does have those resources. I mean, it's even easier for somebody like him to avoid a situation like this. But I don't think we're going to really have any more than speculation to say at this point until we learn what exactly happens. And, I mean, there's been talk that because Arizona's drunk driving rules are so strict, he can actually face a significant amount of jail time for this because it qualifies as an extreme DUI. I guess we'll just have to wait and see how that goes, unless either of you guys have anything more to say.
Do you have any last thoughts on it, Paul? I'm good.
Would jail time hold back his arbitration clock?
Oh, God!
Yes.
All right, I'm done.
It got a little real in there.
Thanks for breaking that wall of seriousness there. That was uncomfortable for a little while.
Final topic.
Yeah, so anyway, what I was going to say before was one of the posts that Andrew threw up today with a picture and a tweet and everything was a response to Tracy Ringlesby's article where Ubaldo Jimenez admitted, apparently, that he was not thrilled with not being offered a long-term deal in the same tradition as Tulowitzki and Gonzalez were last year, and even as early as spring training when he was – you know, had his finger issue and so forth. He was already kind of hoping for a trade, and you know, I've scanned the internet reaction for this just a little bit, and it seems to be pretty split. A lot of people are still really upset about the team and the way they handled him, and not just the way they handled him the day he was traded, but sort of in general throughout the whole of last year. And then there's people who really see this as serious blow to their interpretation of Jimenez's personality, which had always been sort of, you know, very team oriented, and he seemed like just this fantastically, positive guy. And so I'm wondering if either of you have any extreme changes in the way you think about him or his character, or if this just doesn't mean anything at all.
That was a hell of a thesis there, Greg.
I don't have any immediate reaction to it, honestly, only because I kind of always tend to read these things and take an emotionless, like, step back stance. So it's pretty hard for me to gauge what exactly happened, you know, and how much to kind of believe everything. So, you know, did he demand to be traded? Was he just unhappy? Did he, you know, force himself to pitch through injuries so that he would not stay on the disabled list to allow himself to be traded, right? Like, there's a lot of different levels of things to consider here that would really sway my opinion one way or the other. Although finding this out, to the extent that it's, you know, that all the information is true, I think really does kind of show such why I guess Dan O'Dowd kind of has been attacking this cultural thing, you know, with such, you know, vigor about replacing players and getting, you know, the type of guys that he wants on the club and things like that. This is in a way is something much different than a guy underperforming who had never put it together, you know. So I think that's kind of what I'm taking away from it.
Well, this class of players has really really burned Dan O'Dowd so far. While I maintain that Iannetta was very effective in his time with the Rockies, there was clearly some disconnect there as the Rockies traded him to the Angels. Dan O'Dowd got audibly tense when we talked about Seth Smith's home run totals in the conference call for the season ticket holders. Ian Stewart never panned out and was pretty much benched during the entire second half of the season, even after he came off the DL, he pretty much never played again with the Rockies, and there's no doubt whatsoever that he was on his way out the door. And it's Ubaldo Jimenez is also, I mean, not, well, he wasn't drafted. He came up right around the same time as these guys. Like he's like the elder statesman of that group there. And he was also a disappointment in this regard. And I think he feels really burned by this group of players. And so I'm kind of hoping that Dexter Fowler can hold on.
These past few years, I think back to these conversations we've had at this point during the season, and every time we've been saying, you know, Seth Smith, this has to be the breakout year. Ian Stewart has to be the breakout year, and we did that twice for 2010 and 2011, and now we're kind of just down to Fowler. And I mean, well, on one hand, it's nice to not have an entire group of people that you're trying to pin all these desperate hopes on. At the very least, you kind of want to see at least one of them pan out.
No, that's absolutely correct. There's a lot of hope for a lot of these guys, and a lot of people hung on to them for a long time. So yeah, it is very disappointing that that no one but Fowler has panned out so far, at least in the GM's eyes. And I wonder if there's some sort of a get on board with Team Tulo thing or get out going on. I mean, it's just kind of not really a conspiracy theory, but no, I guess you could call it a conspiracy theory. It sounds kind of conspiracy theory, but he's clearly taken over the team. He's got, like, you know, the workout compound in Vegas with him and Giambi, like, you know, up in a guard tower or something like that. And everybody's come pledge to the Tulowitzkis. No, seriously though, they got kind of an in club now, is what it seems like. There's the Venezuelans, because there's just a big cultural impact of the Rockies on Venezuela, thanks to Galarraga. But there's the Tulowitzki club, and everyone else is kind of like milling around at a dance and don't know anyone or something like that. They haven't been here long enough to really gel with the team yet, as far as we can see as fans. Kadir, for example.
It'll definitely be interesting to see how this all plays out. Yeah.
Andrew, did you keep the food too close to your hands again?
Damn it! It's just soup. I have soup right here. It's egg drop freaking soup. Oh, damn it.
Yes, it is audible. Your mic picks it up too much.
Listen, Andrew, we're trying to build a culture of value in this podcast, all right? Doing stuff like that is unconscionable.
If we learn that you drink and drive sometime soon, there will be hell to pay.
No egg drop soup and driving. Okay.
Seriously.
Well, Andrew has done this podcast while driving before. So
did that one actually get published?
One of them did. I think one of them did not.
I remember you couldn't hear me like the entire time, and so you just got rid of it.
Well, yeah, there was one. I can't remember if it was one where you were driving or not, but something weird happened, and he had to use a built-in mic maybe or something like that, and I thought that maybe I could clean it up, so we recorded it anyway, but then I messed with it for like 2 hours, and I was like, yeah, this sounds awful. So, yeah, that's why we have standards now. Anyway.
Awkward.
So, let's see, we are at 33 minutes, which is just about right, so unless any of you guys have any final thoughts, I think we're done.
Nothing that wouldn't be launching into another big Ubaldo talk there. It's kind of sad. If it does feel kind of like the betrayal is complete or something, and it's like, I don't know who to be mad at anymore. He used to be like, poor innocent Ubaldo was traded by the big evil Rockies because he needed to be the sacrificial lamb for the rest of his class. And then it's like, oh, wait, he was like, wow, you guys are all douchebags. I'm out of here.
Yeah, in conclusion, we have no clue as fans what's going on, ever.
It's sad.
Yeah. This whole podcast has been three different topics that we can draw no conclusions from. So you have just wasted 35 minutes of your time listening to this.
Happy baseball, everyone!
Okay, just a scheduling update. This year, it looks like we're going to be posting these every Friday instead of every Monday. It's just easier on the schedule that way. Until something else happens and more wrenches are thrown into the gears and all our schedules are messed up, which will happen, but hopefully not too soon. So for now, we'll try to get on a regular schedule. Till then, take care.